morning we read verses 1 and 2. We'd like to just read verse 2 this evening. Isaiah 32, verse 2. And a man shall be as a hiding place from the wind, a covert from the tempest, as rivers of water in a dry place, as the shadow of a great rock in a weary land. Again, this is part of Isaiah's message to the kingdom of Judah. I believe during the reign of Ahaz, who was a very wicked king. In verses 1 and 2, Isaiah draws the people's attention to a coming king. And the most immediate application would referred to the coming reign of Hezekiah, who would be the next king, and spiritual reformation would take place under him. As we said this morning, Hezekiah would be someone that they could depend upon, someone who had their best interest in his heart. But more importantly, in a much broader and more significant sense, Isaiah in this verse is looking beyond his own day, looking beyond Hezekiah to the coming of Jesus Christ into the world. And he would be the king who would reign in righteousness, and he's the one that is described in verse 2. And as we said this morning, Jesus Christ is really the only one who gives full value to the meaning of the words of verse 2, the only one who gives full value to the meaning of, "Behold, a king shall reign in righteousness." He is the only one who completely fulfills what is illustrated here. With that being said, we are to be like him. We are to be like Christ. Jesus said to his own in John 13:15, "For I have given you an example that ye should follow, or that ye should do as I have done to you." Strict context, of course, is the washing of the feet. But it applies to the life ministry of Jesus Christ. It is declared in 1 Peter 2:21 concerning Christ that he's left us an example that we should follow his steps. And we read in 1 John 2 and verse 6, "He that saith he abideth in him ought himself also to walk even as he walked." And from Romans 8 and verse 29, we see that as saved individuals, we are designed to be conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. One day we will be completely conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. Until then, we are becoming more and more like Jesus Christ. Again, only Christ can fulfill what is written in Isaiah 32 and verse 2. But we're to be like him, though we are imperfectly. We cannot perfectly be like Christ, but we are to be like him, and we are in an imperfect way. We understand that. We are to possess Christ-like characteristics. Again, read verse 2. These are characteristics of Jesus Christ. We are to be like him. And you read verse 2 and you think of Jesus Christ. But as you think of Jesus Christ, truly he is a hiding place from the wind. Truly he is a covert from the tempest. Truly he is rivers of water in a dry place. And he is a shadow, or he is a shade in a weary land. He's all of those things. But we're to possess Christ's likeness. So there's a sense in which we too are to be these things. I want to speak this evening on be that person. Be that person. Taking our thought from verse 2 of Isaiah 32. So consider, be that person. First of all, these were very difficult times that Isaiah was ministering in. Again, when he began his ministry, it was the year that King Uzziah died. At the time, it seemed like everything was prosperity. And it was true temporally. But in reality, even under Uzziah, Judah was a nation, a kingdom in crisis. Regardless of the seeming prosperity, in reality, they were a nation of confusion and chaos, spiritually. Regardless of the seeming prosperity, in reality, they were a nation in trouble. They were a nation soon to face disaster. Regardless of the seeming prosperity, in reality, they were a nation under the judgment of God. And further judgment, greater judgment, was not far away. From chapter 1 of Isaiah, you don't have to turn there, but from chapter 1 we see that the nation is seen as rebellious against God. Prospering, but rebellious against God. From Isaiah 1, we see that they were inconsiderate of God. They were ungrateful to God. They were thoughtless of God. They were a people who had corrupted the things of God. They had forsaken the Lord. They had provoked the Lord. And as a result, they were a people that were weighted down with sin. They were a people who were infected by sin. They were a people who were hurting because of sin. They were a people caught in the awful cycle of sin. You go on to Isaiah chapter 2. In verse 6, we see that the land was full of soothsayers, like the Philistines. And in chapter 2, verses 7 and 8, we see that though the land was full of silver and gold, the land was also full of idols. So yes, there was seeming prosperity, but there were some deep, deep spiritual problems going on. In chapter 3, verse 12, we read, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them." What that states is that God's order had been forsaken. When children and women rule, God's order is forsaken. That's not God's order. And that's what was going on. He went on to say, "O my people, they which lead thee," the women in this case, "cause thee to err and destroy the way of thy paths." That's nothing against women. It's about God's order. They were no longer doing what they once were. Chapter 5, verse 5, God's protective hedge was being removed. When that happens, you're in trouble. And in chapter 5, verse 8, there's the spirit of selfishness, covetousness, materialism, worldliness, spirit of self-advancement. In other words, the people were influenced and governed and driven and shaped by the temporary. Chapter 5, if we turn over there, verse 11. Chapter 5, verse 11. "Woe unto them that rise up early in the morning Catch that, early in the morning, that they may follow strong drink. That's the reason they get up early. They continue until night, until wine inflame them. He goes on in verse 12, and the harp and the vial and the tabret and pipe and wine are in their feasts. So it was a time when it was pleasure mania, if you will, self-indulgence, time of festivity. But there was a forgiveness or a forgetfulness of God. Notice there's strong drink. Along with that strong drink, there's music. And there are feasts. And the people are spellbound and addicted to this life. That's why they rise up early. And they stay up late. They're addicted to these things. Until wine inflamed them. Self-control is gone. Again, everything seems okay temporally. But the nation was a mess. And they're living like animals in the farmyard. In verse 12 also, notice the last part of the verse, but they regard not the work of the Lord, neither consider the operation of His hands. This is the life of practical atheism. You know, there are a lot of people who profess to know the Lord, who profess to be children of God, who would tell you they believe in God, but they live lives of practical atheism. They live as if there were no God. They live in disregard for God. They live in rejection of God. They live with God dismissed from their lives. They do not have room for God. They're ignorant of God. And if you don't have room for God, you are ignorant of God. If you disregard God, you are ignorant of God. They live their lives in supposed freedom. But because their life is void of God, verse 13 says, therefore my people are gone into captivity. Therefore my people are gone into captivity because they have no knowledge. Have no spiritual knowledge. It hasn't taken hold in their life. They're mired in ignorance of the Lord. They're mired in ignorance of themselves. They're mired in ignorance concerning the purpose of life. In Isaiah 5, verse 18, woe unto them that draw iniquity with cords of vanity, that and sin, as it were, with a cart rope. What this is a picture of is a people attached to sin, deeply involved in sin, a people who expend their energy in sin. It is defiant sinfulness, an open and blatant attachment to adultery, to fornication, to immorality, to immodesty, to perversion, to lewdness, to idolatry, to hatred, to lying, to cheating, stealing, on and on we could go. Chapter 5, verse 20. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, and put darkness for light and light for darkness, and put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. There's moral perversion. They had ignored God. They would not hear the prophets of God. And the result is they moved further and further from God. They dismissed God from their thoughts and their lives. They became desensitized to the things of God. That's how it works. And to them, the unacceptable became acceptable. And that which was accepted by God became unacceptable to them. That's what Isaiah 5:20 is talking about. So they became a society and culture. They call evil good, they call good evil. They become a society and culture that redefined evil, that redefined good, that minimized that which was abominable in the sight of a holy God. This is what will happen unless the Lord comes soon. God's people, not all of them, because God always has a remnant, but God's people will come to accept. Oh, they may not come right out and say it's okay, but they will learn to accept homosexuality, lesbianism. It gets in their family, and they're around it all the time. And pretty soon, you accept it. It's already happened in some cases, and I'm telling you, that's how it's going to get into the churches. Many of the churches, not all of them. That's how it's going to get in. Families will learn to accept it. Families, I could make a long list. Families have learned to accept a lot of things that they shouldn't accept. And this is what happened. This is what was going on in Judah. Chapter 5, verse 24. Therefore, as the fire devoureth the stubble, and the flame consumeth the chaff, so their root shall be as rottenness, and their blossoms shall go up as dust, because they have cast away the law of the Lord. That's why this will happen. They cast away the law of God. You do that, good things are not going to happen. And despise the word of the Holy One of Israel. And if you go over to chapter 1, verse 9, except the Lord of hosts have left unto us a very small remnant. We should have been as Sodom, and we should have been like Gomorrah. So in spite of all that was going on, God had a very small remnant. I thank God for God's remnant. Amen. It seems like it's getting smaller all the time. The smaller it gets, the more we ought to appreciate it, that there's still some. We tend to lose sight of the remnant of God. We have a tendency to get our eyes on those who have fallen into what Judah as a kingdom had fallen into. But we need to stop and thank God for that small remnant. So here we are today, very much like the kingdom of Judah. The forces of hell, the enemies and the haters of God, the deniers of God, like a plague of locusts, have relentlessly swarm after swarm come upon the land and devoured it. They've come upon our government and devoured it. They've come upon the judicial system and devoured it. They've come upon schools and devoured them. They've come upon families and marriages and homes and stripped them. Stripped them of respect, of faith, of dependence upon God. Stripped them of morality and values, integrity, sanity, common sense, strip them of that which is good and decent and beneficial. And what's left is that which is horrific, monstrous, and contrary to God. And destruction has engulfed the land. That's where we are today. And society, not knowing where to turn, what do? They look for solutions and answers among the philosophies and the reasonings and the viewpoints of people who have lost their minds. Let me tell you something. You go to a crazy person for advice, you're just as crazy as they are, if not worse. And that's what society is doing today. Going to those who have lost their minds to fix what they have broken. And as a result, we sink deeper and deeper into the abyss. As a nation, a society of destruction and misery and hopelessness. But there's still that small remnant that never will be swallowed up. They'll always be. Now consider what Christ was. We see the background. Again, verse 2 of our text. He's everything that the people need. He's a hiding place from the wind. He's a covert from the tempest. He's rivers of water in a dry place. And he's a shadow of a great rock in a weary land. Jesus is the absolutely perfect fulfillment of those words. Hezekiah would be the imperfect fulfillment of those words. For you and I, Christ is our example. If Christ is the hiding place from the wind, a covert from the tempest, rivers of water in a dry land, the shadow in a weary land, he's not part of the problem, is he? He's the solution. And there are those right now, God's people, those who aren't God's people, who are battered by the wind. There are those who are in life-threatening tempest, where everything seems to be tottering in their life, and they're frightened, and they're filled with apprehension. And our lives as God's people ought not increase the danger, but our lives ought to provide protection. We're to be like Christ. So to a degree, we too are to be like a hiding place from the wind. There are those who are in a dry place, a parched place, a wilted and empty place. And our lives should not add to their dryness. Our lives should be an answer to the dry land that they're in. Not to the same degree as Christ. That can't be. But we're to be like Christ. So to a degree, we too are to be a covert from the tempest. There are those who find themselves in a weary land. And Jesus Christ is a shadow of a great rock in a weary land. In other words, he provides refreshment. So it is with you and I. Our lives ought to be a source of refreshment to those who are in need. We ought never want to be part of the problem. We ought always want to be part of the solution. So it ought to be our prayer that our lives, being like Christ, would be a source of protection. We can't protect perfectly like He does, but we're to be like Him. Moms and dads are to be spiritual protectors of their children. That's being Christ-like. Spiritual protectors of your grandchildren. There are parents today who claim to be God's people who put poison in the lives of their children. They are not spiritual protectors of their children. They are part of the problem. They would not literally feed their children poison, but they give it to them. In unspiritual ways, like Christ, we ought to be a source of fulfillment. A source of refreshment. Again, Hezekiah would be one who would make a positive difference in the life of those in Judah. That ought to be our prayer. Lord, help me to make a positive difference in their life. We can't save them. We can't make the difference to the degree that Christ does. We understand that. But we are to be like Christ. And it ought to be our desire to make a positive difference in the life of a sinner or in the life of another child of God. Today, most are worried about being ministered to. How does the church minister to me? How does the church minister to my family? How does the pastor? How does brother so-and-so? How does sister? What can I get? You're looking at it all wrong. It ought to be, how can I minister to others? You might be in the wind. You might be in the whirlwind, but that still ought to be your thought process. While I'm in this wind, can I be a minister to someone else? Can I be a help to someone else? Can I be a protection to them? And you protect people by giving them sound spiritual advice. They may not like it. They may reject it. They may hate you for it. But that's being a protector. You're trying to protect them. We're to be like Christ. Would add refreshment to people's life. You know, there's people who... Something just came to my mind. We received a letter. I'm not going to say from who. But we received a letter. And from a dear sister, one that we all know. And what she said in that letter, if I dwell upon it, infuriates me because of the way somebody is treating her. This is a pastor's wife. We ought not want to be part of the problem. We ought not want to increase someone else's woes. We ought to desire to be a refreshment and a shade to them. Can we do so to the degree of Christ? Of course not. Ultimately, they need to turn to Christ. But we're to be Christ-like. We're to be like that hiding place. We're to be like that covert. We're to be like that river, that shadow. Hezekiah would be a blessing and not a curse in their lives. I don't want to be a curse in anybody's life. Whether it's the most ungodly sinner on the earth, I don't want to be a curse to them. We want to be a blessing. We're not going to approve of what they do. That's not protecting them. To say yes to everything your children need, you're failing. Or everything they want. You're not protecting them. You're not providing them refreshment. Well, it makes me feel good. It's not about you. Well, I don't like punishing them because it makes me feel bad. It's not about you. Get over how you feel. Hezekiah made their lives better. We've all known people, and there are people here, that I can honestly say, you have made my life better by just knowing you. That's true of a lot of people. My life is more enjoyable just because I know them. Oh, that would be so of each of us. That people can say my life's better because I know so and so. How do we become that person? Well, notice the surrounding or the data surrounding verse 2. In verse 1, a king shall reign in righteousness. If we will be what is said in verse 2, not to the same degree of Christ, but if we will be what is said in verse 2, you have to do this. You have to always recognize Christ as your king. If you cannot recognize Christ as your king, you cannot possibly be verse 2. You have to recognize Christ as your king. He must reign in your heart and your life. And when he does, that leads to Christ-likeness. When he reigns in our lives, certain things happen. Now, in the context of behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, notice verse 3. And the eyes of them, so you can just read, behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and the eyes of them that see shall not be dim, and the ears of them that hear shall hearken. Weak, dim eyes will be made to see more clearly. Ears that can hear physically, but perhaps are spiritually dull, will no longer be that way. They will no longer be insensitive to truth. When you recognize Jesus Christ as your King, you will see things more clearly, and you will be more sensitive toward truth. In verse 4, again, you can read it just, behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, the heart also of the rash shall understand knowledge, and the tongue of the stammer shall be ready to speak plainly. Slow minds will be quickened when Jesus Christ is recognized as King, and they will be able to comprehend truth. In verse 5, things will be judged correctly. If the king reigns in righteousness in your life, the vile person shall be no more called liberal. And that doesn't mean referring to politics. But the liberal person is a giving person, is a good person. But if the Lord is king in your life, you don't consider the vile as good. You see things as they ought to be seen. Nor the churl, which would be the rude, would be said to be bountiful. Things will be seen clearly. As you read these verses, you see all of this speaks of change. When the Lord is king in our life, things change. Things change. And we become more and more conformed to His image. When Christ is King in our life, there's ongoing change and conformity to Jesus Christ. And the result is, one of the results, is verse 2. We can then become a blessing to others. It ought to be our desire to be a blessing to others. It ought to be our desire to be a blessing to the church of which we are a member. It's a sad day when there are visitors more faithful than members. That's sad. Nothing right about it. Nothing at all. I can remember, and I've probably told this story before, but my pastor in the Chicago area, there's one man who was, I give him credit, he invited people to church all the time. He himself was hardly there. And one day, somebody invited came. The first question he asked was, "Where's Brother so-and-so?" And I wanted to say, "He's never here." But I knew that wouldn't help him any. So I said, "Well, he's not here today." And I told that brother, I said, "You know, it's a shame that you invite someone to church and then you're not here. And it's not because you're sick, it's because you had something better to do." That's pitiful. And I'm getting off track. We ought to want to be a blessing to one another. We ought never want to be a problem to one another. We ought never want to be a problem to the church of which we are a member. It scares me when I think about it. I don't think about it a lot. But if I live long enough, I realize the day will come when it would be wise for me probably not to pastor. I realize that. Hopefully I realize it when that time comes. But what scares me is that perhaps I wouldn't make a good church member. I would never want to bring harm to one of the Lord's churches. I would pray that the Lord would strike me dead before I would be a problem to any pastor, to any church. We ought to want to be a blessing. And there are those here who are a blessing. You've been a blessing to home church for decades. You're a blessing to me. You're a blessing to Brother Titus. That's that remnant. That's that remnant. Thank the Lord for them. Well, we may not agree 100% of the time. It's not going to happen. I don't agree with myself 100% of the time. We ought never want to be anything but a blessing to one another. God help us to be Isaiah 32:2. Again, I realize we can't be to the degree that Christ is, but we ought to strive to be these things, to be a protector of others, to be a source of comfort for others, to be a refreshment to others. Because that small remnant, Isaiah 1:9, he calls it a very small remnant. That small remnant, as faithful as they are, sometimes they need someone to just come alongside of them and say, "Brother, sister, I'm here." That's a blessing. And I know that most sitting here want to be that, and we just pray that God would help us to be that person. To be the person like Jesus Christ. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse 7.